A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these arts organizations. Today, we'll hear about a project undertaken by pianist Min Kwan to collect variations on America the Beautiful, which she will premiere in early July. The contributions from more than 70 composers reflect the diversity of experiences and emotions of generations of Americans and newcomers from a variety of backgrounds. I'll speak with Kwan about the work and her plans for the premiere. Let's start off with a look at some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The home of the company that built the Fred J. Cooper Memorial Organ in the Kimmel Center's Verizon Hall and other organs around the country has been destroyed in a fire. According to the New York Times, a June 15th fire swept through Dobson Pipe Organ Builders, based in Lake City, Iowa, destroying buildings, photos, preliminary design sketches of its organs, and the parts of an organ that was in the process of being built for a church in Sydney, Australia. Dobson was founded in 1974 and expanded from building organs for churches in the Midwest to a company whose organs can also be found at St. Thomas Church in New York, St. Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota, and Merton College in England, among other places. According to the Times, the owners do intend to rebuild. The Kimmel Center and the Philadelphia Orchestra are joining together under a single company, seeking to combine their strengths and resources as they and the city's cultural world emerge from the pandemic. In its statement, the organizations said the parent company, the Philadelphia and Kimmel Center, Inc., will be headed by orchestra president and CEO Matthias Tarnopolsky. Kimmel president and CEO Ann Ewers will serve on the new company's board following her previously planned retirement. The orchestra and Kimmel Center will be subsidiaries of the new company, whose finalization will be subject to regulatory approvals. Also in merger news, the Princeton Symphony Orchestra and the Princeton Festival announced that they are combining forces, with the festival joining the symphony's existing range of classical, pops, chamber music, and education concerts and programs. Gregory Gehern, who this past year succeeded founder Richard Tang Yuk in leading the festival, will join PSO Executive Director Mark Ace and Music Director Rossin Milanoff on staff as festival director. With the merger, the Princeton Symphony will become the festival's in-house orchestra, which will provide additional opportunities for summer performances. And finally, Pennsylvania Ballet has changed its name to Philadelphia Ballet, reflecting its connections and ties to its home city. The ballet company, under artistic director Angel Correa, will return to live performances in the coming season, beginning in October. In the company statement, executive director Shelley Power said founder Barbara Weisberger originally planned to name the company for the city. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. Pianist Min Kwan, professor of piano at Mason Gross School of the Arts at Rutgers and founder and director of the Center for Musical Excellence, was already planning a project to commission variations from composers similar to the Diabelli variations before the pandemic put much of life on hold. During the past year, she revised that plan, asking composers to use the theme of America the Beautiful to explore emotions, perspectives, and views on America. She ultimately received works from 75 composers, including Bruce Adolph, Victoria Bond, Vijay Iyer, Tanya Leon, Nico Muley, and Daniel Bernard Rumain, some of whose works reflect aspects of the pandemic, shutdowns, and social justice protests of the past year. Kwan will premiere the pieces over the course of 6 days, beginning July 4th, including free-streamed performances and 2 nights of live concerts in the catacombs of the Greenwood Cemetery in Brooklyn. I spoke with Kwan recently about her thoughts for the project and the broad variety of works that she'll be performing.
It's been a very like gratifying process and my big pandemic project actually. So I've been toying with the idea of having 21st century New American Diabelli project. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Viennese Diabelli of almost 200 years ago. But through my job at Rutgers and at Center for Musical Excellence, this program nonprofit that I run, I've always been curating or producing concerts that has a thematic interest and that tells a, you know, a story rather than just piece by piece. Or so I'm always thinking about what might make a wonderful program. And it feels like for those concerts, I've always had, I like big party. I like to have a lot of people. Maybe it's because I'm just a solo pianist and oftentimes I'm isolated, you know, when pianist on that big stage, but I like to have a lot of people on my stage or on any stage performing together. So usually all these concerts that I produce for Rutgers or CME would have anywhere from 12 to 25 musicians, whether they are my colleagues, you know, guest artists from the performing field or my students from Rutgers and combination of such. So I have done a Diabelli concert at Carnegie with 50 composers that Diabelli has commissioned. And of course, Vienna was the central hub of classical music back in, you know, 1780s. But now I really believe it's America. With all the great diversity and, you know, just it's a, just culturally such a rich place and a very creative place, right? So I've wanted to do this for some time, and actually Carnegie Hall day was booked for, I think, June last year. And of course, if a pandemic happened, I was halfway into the project. And like everybody else in the world, or especially in America, I was just very, very despondent and just, I don't know, I took a couple of months to just reflect and to rethink about the project. And then something clicked and I thought, wait a minute, now I actually have a better opportunity, because if I had just put on a concert at Carnegie Hall, let's say, only those people who heard about it or knew me would have come. But now through this virtual format outlet, I can actually reach a lot more people. And then also I started get on the phone and Zoom. Zoom was just like a lifesaver, right? And every day, you know, I've been Zooming with composers, sometimes as many as eight, you know, every hour. And not only it was just personally, it saved me, because it was a way to really connect, speak to another musician, and together think about what can we do in this very important time in America. My husband is a medical doctor, surgeon, and I would see him going to hospital and come home every day, you know, having witnessed all these very dramatic and just, you know, very sad realities of the hospital, literally people dying, right? And I'm sitting home with all my concerts canceled, a lot of teaching canceled or transferred to the Zoom. You know, I just felt very kind of hopeless and helpless and useless too, in a way. You know, you can be sitting at the piano and play some sad music, but is that really all we can do to, you know, console yourself and others at this time? So what I did was I tried to motivate all these composers to do something. Let's make a snapshot of this really important time so that future generation of musicians or, you know, listeners from all across can look back at this time, 2020, and say, you know, there were a lot of bad things that happened, a lot of destruction, death, and chaos, right? But there was also America Beautiful, the new project, and new pieces, new energy, new expression of life, and, you know, with hope. And so that's kind of what I tapped onto and then started to speak to composers about. And, you know, I didn't put any guidelines as to how to write, you know, or other than the time frame. But I said, make this completely yours, how you are feeling at this time. Mm-hmm. You know, America the Beautiful, how you might be feeling about America past, you know, present or future. So because of that, I mean, the response was very, very gratifying. And it was wonderful, because I think also a lot of composers were just sitting home depressed, you know, also right? A lot of their commissions stopped, or they simply didn't want to write anything. They simply didn't want to do anything, you know? And then I think this kind of collective project, and I said, you know, together, I think we can make a statement. Individually, maybe not as powerful, especially with everything that was going on. We need to really come together. And I really felt that music, the field that I was in, and classical music, was so richly diverse, you know, and so many cultures. And, you know, I came to America from Korea at a very early age. I was in my early teens. And one of the things that I really admired and I thrived on myself, because I started to make friends from all different countries. It was a very, very international, you know. I started at Curtis first, and then, you know, it was just very international community. And I've always been part of that community. And I think it was possible because it was in America. You know, I often go back to Korea to give masterclass, for example. And often I sit out to the audience when I give the class, and I look at 500 same color hair, you know, similar looking people of one nation. So that shocks me now, because I'm now so used to seeing, you know, people of very different colors and shapes and sizes, and just that's become norm for this. And still, especially in classical field, we think that we only play music by white men from who are dead, you know, 302 years ago, and that's just not the case. And yeah, one of the big lessons I learned was also to just listen a lot, because many of these composers are ones that I had not known, you know? So this research, I was just exploring so much online. And again, pandemic helped me, I think, because suddenly all my concerts and things were canceled, and it just gave me this opportunity to look at this new possibility, you know?
Right.
And it was just really exciting. And still to this day, I can't believe the type of pieces I have in front of me on my music stand, you know? And sometimes it really requires me to step out of my comfort zone. You know, I come from a very purist training, you know, going to Curtis, learning Beethoven, Chopin, Schumann, you know, the very standard repertoire. And I have played new music or given premieres, but not like this, not 75 at the same time. It's been a very, very humbling experience, but also like learning about all these different cultures, because I mean, majority of these composers come from somewhere, and their parents come from somewhere, you know, and then they bring with them. I mean, I'm learning to play Persian classical music, and there's Jewish chant, you know, there is Assyrian music influences. There's of course American ragtime to, you know, spiritual gospel influenced. So I'm just having a blast as a Korean person, a Korean girl having, you know, come to America with a dream. And this is really a dream. Yeah, come true.
You have 75 compositions. How did you reach out to and contact the composers? Did you have people contact you? How did that process work?
Yeah, I know. And also I wanted to stop at like maybe 50, and then it just, the project grew way too big. But once I got, like, I was on a roll, you know what I mean? And I don't know, I think with a lot of courage, but again, pandemic helped me. I knew composers were home, as I was, and I started reaching out to them. I mean, some of them, also I had previous, you know, working relationship with, like Richard Dinapore or Fred Hirsch. I've known these people, and Jonathan Berger of Stanford, I've already given his premiere at Carnegie a couple of years before. So I tapped onto some of these already familiar relationships or friendships. And then of course there were some new people, and I mean, people like Terry Riley, oh my goodness, I read about him in music history book. And, you know, doing after doing some research, I found out he's like meditating in the middle of some mountain in Japan. But I tracked him down, and he actually called me on my birthday. That was like the that was an amazing gift. I couldn't believe I was Zooming with 83-year-old Terry Riley sitting in Japan, you know, and here he was writing me a piece. It was really wonderful. You know, a few people said no because of the kind of project it was, and just even to hear about America as something beautiful when it wasn't really beautiful. And I think people had difficulty reconciling, you know, their feelings with this new prospect of writing something around that topic. But if the topic could mean many things, you know, like America means many things to many of us. And nothing is beautiful all the time, but we live with the possibility of beauty or, you know, hope. And, you know, it's also like a process. And, but I'm so glad that many said yes and have written such wonderful like range of pieces. So I have something very, you know, somber and dark and sad, of course, to something very hopeful, you know, a lot of question marks at the end, and pieces that have really dual respect to it, you know, this love for the country, and on the other hand, frustration and confusion about the country, you know, many pieces reflect that both idea. And then other people just when I begged them actually to can you please write something happy now, you know, we're coming to the end of the tunnel. We can't just be sitting here being sad. So please write me something very energetic, you know, very fun. So a few people have done that too. So yeah, it's a really amazing collection of new music. And one day I hope many young pianists, young or old or of any age, will play this.
It sounds like there was a lot of discussion generated then in creating this. What are you hoping that perhaps audiences and other people take away from hearing the pieces and also listening to some of the conversations you'll have with the composers?
That we are all very different, but we're very same in that we are human, feeling the same kind of fear and, you know, confusion and anger sometimes. We're vulnerable. And I think that makes us also be very expressive, and that's what's captured in, you know, it's kind of like a confession of all these composers from a time that was very vulnerable to, you know, we all felt it. And so I hope when people hear it, that they feel that, they reflect on the time. It's truly like a snapshot of the very unprecedented time, historical time, we as Americans would remember forever, right? And I think it's like going to a museum and looking at beautiful artwork from some time ago, you know, it's there. And I really wanted them to be there for us, you know, rather than all this news clippings, online articles or, you know, news of what had happened.
Mm-hmm. You'll be premiering them over the course of 6 days. Some will be online, and then you do have two performances slated live.
Yes.
I can imagine you're looking forward to the live performances.
Yes, of course, very much. And especially, I think most of the composers I am playing will be there. And to have, you know, maybe 10 composers in attendance, that's very, very rare. So I'm very excited about that. And I've gotten very friendly, and, you know, I've really gained 75 new friends. And as you said before, it wasn't just they writing a piece and then just throwing it at me. It was a very collaborative process. And again, Zoom and pandemic time allowed us to have that additional layer of collaborative process because, you know, again, Terry Riley and many composers out in California or different parts of the world, or, you know, we could meet face to face, talk about it. We would not have thought about doing that before, right? Unless it was an in-person meeting. So that happened. And actually during pandemic, I have been giving live in-person concert, believe it or not. So I'm not that emotional in terms of, oh, here's the first live concert, because I just did it anyway and nobody got sick and we were always very socially distanced, among which I did one outdoor gala where 400 people came and 200 people watched online. So things were possible and it was possible to share music together. Of course, just not as much. And not, you know, it was always with a lot of effort and preparation. And this venue I'm very excited about because it's so unusual. And I think that's probably how we classical musicians will roll from now on, because we're just so hungry to play anywhere. And I think the venue actually adds a lot to the story that you're telling. So for example, we decided to go to the Greenwood Cemetery in Brooklyn, where Bernstein, among many others, is buried, and there's this catacomb, and it's quite a new series, but already gaining a lot of, you know, prestige is in the catacombs. And I think we are, as an audience, first of all, it's a small group that's bonded in a way, and physically and spiritually, just this space kind of inspires that. You know what I mean? And I think for the kind of pieces I will be playing, it's very fitting. It's very atmospheric and acoustics is going to be unusual. And so from now on, actually with this project, I'm looking forward to really now sharing it live with audiences everywhere. And I want to go to all these unusual venues, not just concert halls, you know, wherever people are there curious to listen to this very diverse, it's really a language, and once you learn to speak it or understand it, it's just really fascinating.
You mentioned that the only real limitation or guideline you gave them was a time limit. What are the average lengths of these pieces, and how many will you be performing at any one given setting?
Yeah, really a good question. When I thought maybe I would cap at 50 composers, and when I was at 20, 30, even 50 seemed like a, you know, lofty goal, right? But before I knew it, you know, the numbers kept going up to 70, and I really thought, oh my God, can it be 100? And I just had to stop myself somewhere. So thinking, you know, it would be 50 composers altogether, I said, okay, I did my calculation, you know, I can do this in how many concerts and whatnot. And I thought 2 to 3 minutes, and you need at least that much to be able to express anything. Piece of music needs to have beginning, middle, and ending, you know. In America, the beautiful song itself, you don't repeat it. It needs about that to be a really good variation or transformation of the song. And then, of course, because of the history of Diabelli variation, where I think Diabelli gave the similar prompt, and many of, well, 50 composers wrote about actually 30 seconds to 1 minute variation. So that's why when I did that concert, it was possible to do the entire thing in one recital, plus some newly commissioned things I had done then. But I did give, jokingly, these composers, well, but then Beethoven did go ahead and write 33 variations. So if you feel so inspired, I'm not gonna stop you, you know? I think I did say that to a few composers and I'm afraid they took it literally. So, and it was funny this past, you know, few months seeing these pieces rolling in, and of course still some pieces are being revised and because we talk about it. But I have now something as long as 19 pages and, you know, like 12 minutes of music. There are a few, I would say that's about 7, 8, 9 minutes, but most pieces are happily at about 3, 4 minutes. So yeah, that brings me to this premiere plan. So it's very possible because it's over 5 hours of music, close to 6 hours. So we're still deciding what to do in these live stream premieres. Like, do I talk? Do composers talk? Do we give some context of the pieces? Or do I just play them back to back, like, you know, variations, real true variations? So there are these questions being asked, and I'm trying to think of the best way. But of course, things always go longer than you plan, you know, especially with live stream, who knows. So it's very possible that I won't be able to debut all 75 pieces at one time, you know, so we might do it in phase, but certainly there will be enough pieces to roll out 4 days of live premiere, July 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th. And then 8th and 9th, I'm in this catacomb, but we're doing two sets, two identical sets, two times each day. I just find this to be such an honor, of course, privilege, and also a big responsibility to be playing, to be the voice of 75 different personalities. I think the best part of this group of composers is that not only they come from all different walks of life, backgrounds, and they have different styles, aesthetics of writing. In terms of age, simply, the group is very, very multi-generational, and there are teachers and students and their students, you know, and that's wonderful to see because I've had, for example, Samuel Adler, whose book on orchestration is, you know, being used at every music school, you know, every composer studies with that. And he has students in the project, like Nico Muli and Wang Ro. And there are so many relationships within the project like that. So we have, of course, many Pulitzer Prize winners. Oh, Tanya Leon, it was just announced today that she won Pulitzer. So I think maybe she becomes about 9th or 10th Pulitzer Prize winner in my group. Numerous Rome Prize winners, Guggenheim, and Grammys, of course, you know, Grohmeyer. So this is just amazing group of people writing. But I'm also very, very proud of the younger generation of composers writing in such vivid color and bold expression. And I also have discovery composers in the group, so who are in their 20s and early 30s, who are discovering their voices, but who are hugely talented, and for them to be, you know, presented in the same group as some of their, you know, seniors, I think that's very, very special. And I just feel like it's gonna be a nice big party celebrating new birth of America, not only America, but just this creative energy that America has. And this is what America sounds like today. And I am just tremendously excited to deliver that language of expression.
That was pianist Min Kwan, piano professor at Mason Gross School of the Arts at Rutgers University and founder and director of the Center for Musical Excellence. You can find more information on Kwan and her project at america-beautiful.com. I hope you enjoy the conversations I bring you each week on A Tempo, focusing on the changes and challenges facing the performing arts. But remember, programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.